Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT. This Week in Google. Episode 108, recorded August 17th, 2011. I like big buttons. This Week in Google is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account for 6 months, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIG8. It's time for TWIG, This Week in Hoogle. Actually, we should say, what are we going to call it? Motorugle. Joining me right now to get the latest Google and cloud news to my left, Gina Trapani of smarterware.org, lifehacker.com. Great to see you once again, Gina.
Great to see you. So glad to have the core three back.
Yay. I know. I missed you guys. Did I miss two shows? Wow.
No, actually, just one. Just but then, one? But okay. Jeff, but neither you or Jeff were in last week's show, so I was cold and frightened. It was lovely.
As you said on Google Plus, we got the band back together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jeff Jarvis is here also from the City University of New York, where he teaches journalism. He's also a blogger at BuzzMachine.com. The author
on bass.
On bass.
The band.
Yeah, on bass. That's the name of our band.
No, I'm on bass.
Oh, on bass.
Jeff Jarvis on bass. Sorry, I'm going for it.
I get it. Is Gina a drummer?
I was like, is that a baseball reference? I didn't know.
We are so bad. God, we're a bunch of nerds.
I'll be the drummer.
I think Gina is our lovely,
lead singer?
Everybody gets a crush on lead singer.
Yeah, she is definitely the lead singer.
I'll be Courtney
sure.
Love.
Yeah, Courtney Love. Yeah. I think you're more Pixies, but okay.
Okay.
And then,
I'll take that.
Yeah, not so bad. And then Kevin Marks is also here of Salesforce Now, right?
Yes, that's right. Salesforce.com.
Great to see you. But Kevin's worked everywhere, including Google itself. The mothership, Apple, British Telecom. He's an expert in standards and everything else, including, in fact, it turns out, video lighting. I didn't know this, but he was a BBC video engineer when he first started out. That's amazing.
Yes, I dark past him.
How did you transition from that into the internet stuff?
Well, when I was at the BBC, there was a group called the Interactive Television Unit, which was the group that made the BBC Doomsday Project, which some of you may vaguely remember as an attempt in 1986 to survey the UK and produce an educational video disc and a computer system around that.
Wow.
So that lot had finished in 86, but the unit was still there in 88 when I joined. And I got a... after I'd been doing mainstream audio-video stuff for a while, I went and worked there for an attachment, for an internal... reassignment, and then they spun out as a startup in 1990 as Multimedia Corporation, which is where I then worked for 1990 through 97.
And you did QuickTime at Apple, so you kind of stayed in the video arena for a
while.
That's
right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We got to have, you know what, Eileen, we should get Kevin on triangulation, because we always talk about the day's events with Kevin, because he's such a great insight, but I think his story is fascinating.
We might have an opening next week, Kevin.
we'll be in touch. So the big story, I don't need to say it. I mean, it's probably the tech news story of the summer. Broke early on Monday. So early, we didn't even get to do a breaking news feed of it. It just happened, like, out of nowhere. Larry Page holds a phone call and says, we bought Motorola for $12.5 billion. We should be specific. Motorola Mobility, which is the cell phone division of Motorola. But that does include, does it not, the set-top boxes?
Yes. Yes.
And that's, I mean, a lot of coverage over the patents. They acquired in this purchase 7,500 patents, something like that.
24,500 patents and applications across both areas.
Well, that's a difference.
$400,000 per patent.
Holy cow. But well worth it, because it gave a patent portfolio. Google only had 1,000 prior to this. It gave them a patent portfolio to defend themselves against Microsoft and Apple's Nortel patents, among others. Although Motorola was doing some saber rattling of its own, threatening to sue other people last month And I know they've been kind of, people have been talked about suing them. So does this get Google off the hook, or does it just make them a bigger target?
I think it gets them off the hook.
You wrote a great piece on this, Jeff, actually.
Well, thanks. Yeah. As indelicately as I say anything, I said that it's really lawyer repellent, or if you prefer, rat poison. because I think that you know, if you look at the fact that they got HTC, LG, and Sony Ericsson to say the same PR statement supporting this, it's about protecting the ecosystem of Android. And yes, Motorola was going to start suing them. It's now not going to. They have mud balls to fly back to Apple and Nokia and Microsoft and company. And
this thing that we call mutually assured destruction in the patent wars.
Right. And, you know, it's what I said, too, is I think it's a tragedy and a pity that this much capital, $12.5 billion here, $5 billion for the Nokia, for the Nortel deal, did not go to investment, to innovation, to creation, to employment. It went to fending off lawyers in patent deals. But fine if it finds a way for some peace, and if we can move ahead with innovation. And what I imagine, what I hope for, is that there may be other companies that were waiting in the wings, afraid to touch Android because mm-hmm. they were too small. You know, the fabled iFridge, right? The connected refrigerator, or the connected TVs, or new connected cars, and all kinds of things that can now use Android with more safety. That's my hope is that having this open system. Now, of course, the problem, the irony of this is that Google has to compete with its own suppliers. This forced it into channel conflict. Larry Page said that Motorola will be operated separately, though the head of Motorola said they're going to integrate, but I think I believe Larry. They're assuring the other members of the ecosystem that this is about protecting Android, and I think that's obviously got to be the case. I think the Wall Street analysts who've been dissing this, thinking that Google's in the phone business, are utter friggin' idiots who don't get what really happened here. And finally, my hope is that maybe with Google involved, we could finally fix the worst computers on Earth, otherwise known as cable set-top boxes.
Right. Well, that, you know, of course they got patent benefit, but it's not mutually exclusive. It could be that Google does want to, you know, they have always done deals. First, they did them with HTC, and then later with Samsung to make vanilla Google phones. I mean, I presume now that the Droid line, the Motorola Droid line, will become a vanilla Google phone. So they are in the handset business, I would guess.
Yes, but could you imagine a scenario where they get out of that business, where they slough parts of that off?
They don't need to be, is what you're saying.
They don't need to be, and even if antitrust problems come, they're fine. You know, we'll get rid of that.
Well, they just run it as a separate division. Yeah.
But as someone said, some analyst said at some point, that even if they did that, the patents are still cheap.
Are you, Kevin Marks, reassured by the partners, Samsung, HTC, LG, saying, oh, this is fine, this is good, we're not worried? Or do you think that's lip service and they're watching with narrowed eyes to see what Google does next?
I think it's both. I think they are reassured because this patent thing was a mess. You know, they're all being sued by Apple and Microsoft and everyone else as well.
Samsung's got to be thrilled.
You know, Jeff's right, and there's a rat's nest of lawsuits around this as well. If you look at the graph of who's suing whom, it is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, Google historically has been good, you know, good about using patents defensively, and clearly do want the Android ecosystem to succeed. They have more invested in that, in it succeeding than anyone else. So I should think there's a fair bit of honesty in that. It's like, good, we don't actually have to pay Bulmer's blackmail to make Android devices anymore. If we can get to that, that'd be great. You know, that was the, you know, that's the piece that they'll be feeling. Yeah, there'll be some concern about Google owning a potential manufacturing competitor. But one thing that Google has done historically with Android is for each release, they've worked with one manufacturer to build the exemplar for that release. You know, if you think back, they did it with Motorola with the first Droid. That was the one that they said, okay, this release of Android is going out on this phone. This is the exciting new phone. And we'll do that. And they did one with HTC, and they've done it with the others. And they've been, you know, rotating through that. They may need to rethink that and be a bit more even-handed about that and release multiple in one go. But I would think that would be good for the ecosystem as well. The other piece of this is, I spoke about this before in January, is that there are actually two bits to Android. There's the open source bit, which is everywhere. It's literally on all kinds of devices, and no company is too small to use that. And a lot of the sort of weird Chinese consumer electronics companies that are speculatively making, you know, random devices that you buy in Kmart or Walmart are becoming Android devices because it's easier than writing their own firmware. And that piece is that is still going to carry on, and they're, you know, much less worried about lawsuits in that realm because they tend to be small companies that they can fold up and throw away if something happens. But the other piece is the with Google part of Android. You know, if you look on any of the mainstream Android phones, somewhere on the back it says with Google, which means they've signed an agreement with Google that lets them have Maps and Gmail and the Android Market and a whole bunch of other bits and pieces. And that's the piece that Google has used as a licensing control to say you have to conform to certain things to be an Android phone. That's been their hookup to now. So there's already been this, you know, bipartite model for Android, and I think that will continue. The patent protections that apply to both halves of that, but it may be that they'll adjust the way that they do business with that. But if they've already got an objective standard you have to agree to be an Android licensee, they can use that as the wall between them and Motorola if they want to as well.
Right. Well, Gio, I put a document up on the sorry, Gina, but before you get a chance, with a paragraph with details on the patents.
What's your sense, though, of the risk involved here? Standard & Poor downgraded. In fact, they made a sell recommendation on Google stock. The saying, their analysts said that they weren't sure if the patents would help protect Android or Google. There's also the issue of they paid $12.5 billion. Now, Google had more than $30 billion in cash, so they could afford it. But it is more than 2 years' worth of Google revenue combined for $12.5
billion. Was it in stock or in cash? I didn't see that.
I didn't see that either.
I believe it's cash.
It's actually cash.
I believe so.
That's weird, because I would think they would do an acquisition mostly in stock.
Well, it's a hell of a deal for Motorola shareholders who just got rescued. Well,
and let's point out, Motorola, the mobility division, had not been profitable for a while. In fact, for a while, they gave up cell phones entirely. They had a net loss for the second quarter of this year of $56 million. This is not a healthy company they're buying, which does kind of confirm the belief that, well, they're buying them for the patents alone.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's note that S&P downgraded America, and what did people have to buy next? T-bills.
Yes, let's take all of our money.
S&P value junk up. Right. Can we please, you know, picket S&P as a bunch of bloody idiots?
Okay.
Anyway.
But I think what they're saying is not unreasonable. I mean, looking at the balance sheet alone, it's a fairly... I think even Google must agree. This is a fairly risky thing. This isn't like a no-brainer for Google.
Okay, but Leo, by that account, of course, then Google stock should have cratered with YouTube, right?
It's a strategic... Well, in hindsight, it probably should have.
Well, yes and no, but it turned out to be only three or four billion,
right? Not $12.5 billion.
It was $600 million,
right? But $600 million. Oh, okay. They got a lawsuit instead. Yeah, that was.
Is it the case that because Google lost the Nortel patents to Microsoft, Apple, and that consortium, that do you think that this deal was in process at that point, or that this happened 5 weeks ago, that they scrambled in those 5 weeks and said, "Quick, we needed a set plan B."
Who knows? Supposedly bidding as well.
Right. That was one story. I think it was O'Malley's story that Microsoft had been eyeing Motorola. Boy, that would really put the screws on Google to do something. Because if Microsoft has Nortel and Motorola...
Right, and basically it has Nokia as well.
And Nokia.
Yeah.
Antitrust.
So the other thing that a couple of commentators pointed out is that Motorola has a Java license, historically, that they've done for their phones, which Google hasn't up to now.
That solves may also the Oracle problem.
The Oracle problem as well, if they can convey that one correctly.
Motorola also has patents in near-field communication.
I want to know why none of us saw this coming. Why didn't anybody? Why did no tech journalist say, "Hey, you know what?"
It was a great Monday morning. It was such a good bombshell, right?
It was like this great
new drop that I was just like, "What?" You know, I know that this is mostly about the patents, and I know that it's about protecting Android and all that, but I'm still really or wondering and excited about what this is going to mean for consumers. I mean, my first reaction was like, I cannot wait to see what the next pure Google Experience phone is going to be. And no doubt it's going to be a Motorola phone or a Google Roller phone. But that's apparently not necessarily the case. Google's still going to, you know, have different manufacturers bid on the next Nexus phone, and they're going to choose the best one. And I understand they need to put up this wall, and they don't want to scare off their other, you know, Samsung and HT and all those other guys. But I have to tell you, I really would like to see Google get involved, closely involved with Motorola or however it's being operated, and make just awesome, awesome phones and Google TV units. And I got to tell you, I'd like to see them, you know, tighten the clamps on what they put that by Google or with Google stamp on. You know, I'd like to see them say things like, we're going to standardize the order of the buttons on the phone.
Yes, thank you. The buttons. Yes.
I would like to see them say, no, you're not going to ship Android phones with crapware pre-installed that users cannot uninstall. If you're going to do that, you're not going to use the Google name. Like, I'd like to see them take a little more control and raise the bar for what a great Android phone experience is, right? Because, well, I mean, I've only had...
You know what they should do if they really wanted to go crazy is buy Sprint.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm rooting for it. I would love to see that.
Jenny Gassi Monday was saying that Apple should buy T-Mobile, but also said, but maybe it would make more sense for Google to buy them, which is, you know, that partly just keep them away from AT&T was.
But then the regulators really get involved, because then
we get Google closer to Germany, which is a good thing. Gina, let me ask you a question here. So I agree with you. One of the commenters I said also said that you've got a lot of engineers on the hardware side at Motorola. What struck me as interesting here is that those people could inform the design of Android too really well to find closer ties in between hardware and the operating system. And the irony to me is that probably wouldn't be done for Motorola's benefit, because what's more valuable here is Android. That the proprietary engineering of Motorola could end up becoming more open through Android. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, that does make some sense.
Yeah, I do think that that makes sense. I mean, if you have more communication between the software people, the software engineers and the hardware engineers, that's great for everyone. That means better phones. And if they can, you know, make more information public, or, you know, if they can collaborate more closely, that could be better for everyone. I mean, I got the sticky wicket. That's also the thing that Samsung and HTC are worried about, right? That Motorola is going to have access to maybe hidden APIs or, information sooner than other suppliers. I mean, it gets weird, but after tell you, I think the consumer is the most important thing. I want to see a great Android phone on the market, not the Nexus One or the Nexus S, where only nerds with a lot of money have it, right? I want real
Droid
consumers to have an awesome
a Droid
Android
X or
phone
something like that. I thought the Droid X was a great handset. But and the chat room's saying this, thank God we can kill Moto Blur.
Yes.
Which is their sugar on top of Android. And it's
all right, well, let me devil's advocate for a second here. Because I'm optimist, poly-optimist all the time, so I agree with everything we've said. Now, on the other hand, what happened when Google got close to phone companies in its business by necessity? It did the devil's deal with Verizon.
The Verizon deal, yeah.
So on the one hand, we might be thinking, ooh, the world's best phone, cheaper, free, this is wonderful. But then it's only going to piss off its own manufacturers even more, because now it's in channel conflict. So could this, in fact, put Google more on the side of the hardware manufacturers, like the phone companies, against us, the consumers? That's the devil speaking.
I'd be surprised. I think
Google knows how to do this.
They
know how to build a firewall.
I think so too, but that's the other side of this.
Yeah.
They've said, okay, you know, if you look at how they've done previous releases, they've said, okay, we'll work with one of you to build the reference one. And they rotate through different manufacturers and done that. And that has been a reasonably successful thing to do. And I think, as Gina says, they could use this to encourage more. They could also bring some of the hardware engineering things and bring that out more publicly.
Somebody said...
I think the set-top box piece is also fascinating.
Well, I want to get to that. Let's in a second. But there's definitely something there. But I want to finish the phone conversation.
So there were a couple of other stories talking about HD Android phones coming. VentureBeat and GigaRome were talking about that today.
Yeah.
Saying that they've got larger HD screens showing up that are actually,
Retina display style. Yeah.
Have you tried the 3D phone? That makes no sense.
That's terrible. And I have seen them.
But You know, one of the reasons I liked the Droid in the first place was that it had a very high pixel density before Apple made the, you know, gave that a name, called it Retina display. This is like 256. If you take that same density and add more pixels, you end up with something that's closer to the those other what do you call them, the Evo Androids. But actually, you know, this is 854x480. If you grow that up to 184x720, you get something that's about the size of those Evos, but actually is a full HD screen and is closer to, you know, an iPad in terms of number of pixels. And that, I think that's an enhancement. I think having more pixels in a smaller space is always good. And, you know, I'm sure Apple will be going there soon too. But, you know,
but the competition is good. We want this competition. Of course, Apple's good.
And I think as the, you know, as the honeycomb and ice cream sandwich releases come out, and the sort of the higher definition UI starts making more sense, that will make sense in these smaller form factors as well. That's something I do like about the Galaxy 10.1 is that that UX actually does make much sense and makes good use of those extra pixels.
All right, I think I had some other questions, but I think we're going to take a break and come back and talk more about this acquisition in terms of the set-top boxes, because I think it does impact Google TV. I was just looking through Google acquisitions. Clearly, this is the largest ever. The next biggest ever was DoubleClick. So you go from, this is a Mashable list, $12.5 billion for Motorola Mobility, $3.1 billion, one quarter that size for DoubleClick. That was just last year, or actually, no, 2007. YouTube was $1.6 billion.
Oh, okay, wrong.
$750,000 for AdMob. The ITA acquisition, which I still think hasn't gone through. Has that gone through? Has it been approved yet? $700 million. I know that the regulators were concerned about that. So this is a massive bet on Google's part, an expensive...
I suppose, I mean, you could express those as fractions of cash on hand or fractions of market cap. You know,
that's true.
Doing them in raw dollars is a bit strange when Google is worth a lot more now than it was when YouTube.
Yeah, and in that respect, they could certainly afford it. Interesting.
Well, what it really
says
is
a $2.5 billion breakup fee, which is outrageous.
Yes.
Will there be regulator issues with this acquisition? I guess I suppose it has to be approved, right?
Yeah. Anything involving Google now is going to be a hot button. But, you know, it's hard to see. It's not like there's no monopoly here. There's plenty of competition.
Yep. Is it, though, a little bit like the movie companies owning their distribution, the movie theaters? Is it a little bit like...
I think it would be more so, Leo, if they bought the phone company.
Right. Oh, that, you know, I was joking. There's no way. Oh, I wish they could buy Sprint, but there's no way.
I think in this case, they're going to say to the... What are they going to say to the regulators? They're going to say, Android is open. We license it freely. We will not restrict it to any manufacturer.
They may get some covenants, though, that they, for instance, can't stop doing that.
You know, what are they going to say? Hey, you want us to? We'll license it to Apple.
Yeah. We'd love it. Somebody said, and I think this is true, that Google's learned the lesson that Microsoft's learned, that you can't just make the operating system. You have to have a hardware partner, Microsoft, Nokia, Google, Motorola. Is that the case? You can't just be an OS
company?
I'm not
buying that argument. You know, there's Apple envy as an argument out there, and I'm not buying that one. I think this is a necessity they had to get to, but that's why I say that if they got rid of the hardware, it wouldn't hurt them.
I don't mean envy. I mean merely that the economics of it are that you have to make a handset.
No, because that's not the Google strategy, right? Eric Schmidt has expressed the Google strategy clearly, and that's what this really indicates is the solidity of the strategy, which is that mobile, right? He said late last year that every single strategic goal for Google in the next year was mobile. He said a year before that the strategy for mobile is to have the operating system that's on more devices, thus attracting more developers, thus more apps, thus more users, thus more value.
Could they then spin off the hardware or...
Yes.
And just say, what we got was patents. That's what we wanted. We wanted an unencumbered Android, or at least a somewhat defended Android, and now we're happy. It's worth $12.5 billion.
And there's an argument that the patents would then be free, that they could get enough value out of Motorola hardware manufacturing, open it up, give it permanent, absolutely free license to every patent that there is, right, and the defense around that, spin that off to something else. And the patents that they just paid a fortune, $400,000 each for, could end up being basically free.
I like that idea. Let's take a break. We're going to come back and talk about the set-top box and then A new job for Cyanogen. I'm going to ask Gina about that one. But before we do that, I want to talk about Squarespace. The secret behind exceptional websites, all of you know that if you don't have a website, you don't have a presence in the world nowadays. If you're a business without a website, it's like a business without a phone 30 years ago. You got to have one so that clients and customers and people who care about you can find you. Squarespace is a great way to make a website. Even if you have no experience, you've never done design before, you don't know CSS from JavaScript, from a hole in the ground, Squarespace.com. Give it a try right now. If you go to Squarespace.com and click the Try It Free button, you'll see how easy it is to set up a site. We set up a site on Twit, and we had people designing it before the show was over. What was the name? I wonder if that site's...
Oh, that was funny. That was funny. What was that?
What was the name of that?
Twit Cupcakes?
Twit Cupcakes?
Yes.
Twit Cupcakes.
That's Squarespace.com? Was that it?
Like
Let me
that.
See if the chat remembers. I don't want to go to some random site. And I remember the password was Ohm is hungry, and somebody tried to change it, and I changed it back. Why public sites are a bad idea? I don't think that's... Maybe that is it.
Maybe that is it. Somebody taught us.
Someone edited it.
Oh, you know who got there? Look at... It says, remember the 5th of November. V has been here. Look at that. But that wasn't so impressive. Okay, that's why public sites are a bad idea. Okay, so don't give away your password. Just do it yourself. But it did show you how easy it was to do. Create the site. All you need is a name, a password, an email address. And then you can do everything you could do on Squarespace yourself, including the templates that aren't templated, 60-plus designer styles that look great and you can modify to your heart's content without any knowledge of CSS, just using a mouse, drag and drop, point and click. But if you know CSS, of course, you could do that too. That's actually nice because it means you could take your existing site, use the CSS there, the style sheets there, and make the Squarespace site look the same. Furthermore, you can use their import tool to get the data out of your existing site. And I don't mean just the posts. I mean the links. They stay the same. Yeah, your SEO stays the same. Your images transfer over. Even your comments transfer over from all the big APIs, WordPress, Movable Type, Blogger, TypePad. Just really sweet. And every import has an export. Kind of true to the Google Data Liberation Front motto. You're never trapped at a Squarespace site. You're never going to want to leave, though, because you get the best hosting, the best software, always up to date. When version 6 comes out, you're going to flip your lid. Great content or stats, so you know exactly what your visitors are looking at. Look, you got to try it free. Squarespace.com. Click the Try It Free button. If you decide to buy, this is where we come in. Our offer code is TWIG and the number 8. One word, TWIG 8. Sites as low as $10.67. a month, but you'll save 10% off for the next 6 months when you use the offer code TWIG8. Squarespace, the secret behind exceptional websites. You take a look at our Inside Twit blog. It's one of that's our Squarespace site. We just love it. All right, let's talk a little bit about the set-top boxes. You wanted to get into that. I know Kevin Marks. Motorola Mobility also is one of the two. There's Scientific Atlanta and there's Motorola, the big set-top box manufacturers. Many, many, many people who have cable boxes have Motorola cable boxes. They're crappy. Nobody denies that. They're underpowered. They couldn't run Google TV if they tried. But
they're
it does give
hogs.
Yeah, but it does give Google a, or does it, a foot into this market.
Gives them a supply chain foot. I mean, also, a lot of the reasons those boxes are crap is not so much the hardware as the software they're running on written by cable companies.
True.
That was the whole point of the
But they are underpowered. I mean, I know Microsoft really wanted to get into the set-top box business and really wanted Microsoft software to be on those boxes and couldn't because the economics of it were you can't put enough of a processor in there to run a real operating system.
Well, that's not anything that's true anymore. I mean, this has been true from the 80s.
Right.
When I was at Apple, there was a project.
Apple wanted to do it. That's
quick
right.
QuickTime on a set-top box in whatever that was in the late 90s. You know, there was a whole bunch of attempts at this. And
but cable operators didn't want it.
The problem is the cable operators are the ones who are holding the chain there, and that's the difficult part. And that's what happened to the Google TV. They were the ones who shut that down.
Right.
Right.
Do you make a Motorola branded Google TV now?
Yes.
Yes,
I'm not. The question is, would a cable operator distribute it?
Right.
Right. because the challenge with Google TV was they were saying that it was you know going around them, and Apple TV does that too, but Apple gets away with that because their primary use is on other devices, whereas the Google TV was seen as a direct threat to their control of the channel.
But does Motorola have relationships or distribution channels that Google could take? I'm not really sure how this all works with the relationships and who determines what. But I mean, it seems like this is an obvious foot in the door for Google TV. So, I mean, they're going to at least try something with Google TV.
Yeah, you would think it makes sense. Yeah,
they've got the conversation. But you know, I think I imagine the way it works is that Motorola goes to Comcast and says, they bid it out, and we'll give you 100,000, you know, set-top boxes for $15 each. The cost is really low, and the cable operators say, "Oh, okay." But I think you're right. I think it's not merely that it has to be cheap hardware; it also has to be has to support their business model, which Google really doesn't have much interest in doing.
Right, and what they value is control. That's why they want to own the box, only the authorized box on there.
Right. So maybe this is another part they spin off.
But boy, it would be nice to have a nice box.
We can but dream. Gina, have you fired your Google TV up in the last 6 months? I haven't.
I use it. I use it all
the
time.
You use it?
Yeah, it's my main set-top box. Yes, I totally use it. I really like having a...
So is it
really
much
like
better?
Because
I keep thinking, I should connect it up and get the update and see if it's better.
No, it's not much better. It hasn't gotten the market yet. So when it gets the market, do that.
It gets the market, are you kidding? I'm going to flip my lid. I'm going to go there immediately. I don't know what's holding that up.
And it's supposed to be this month or next month. I mean, it's supposed to be late summer. So so soon. So when that happens, I'll let you know, Leo. You should definitely hook it up. I really like it. I watch weird flash streams, and I love.
It's sitting... In my my TV's here, and then I got the cupboard with the Apple TV and the Roku box and the cable box and the every this and that and the Xbox 360 and the place, all the stuff under there. The problem is really I only have 7 HDMI ports and I have like 8 devices. So the Google TV is sitting there, not connected, and all I have to do is plug it in. I'll have to figure out which to unplug, probably the Apple TV. I don't ever use that. And I'm ready to go. So market, boy, if I could put market on there. I just think of all the stuff that, basically put all the Android apps. On
Sorry.
Your TV. What's happening? What's happening over there?
Sorry, I'm having...
Turn your TV on.
There we go.
She turned on her Google TV.
Yeah. Right, I turned on the Google TV and everything just went to hell. Sorry, I'm back now.
So part of the issue with the Google TV was all the networks cut them off. Does Hulu Plus work on it?
No.
Well, Hulu's not going to have anything soon.
That's true. Hulu's kind of almost out of business, aren't they?
Yep.
Yeah, and the major networks don't work, like ABC.com, or you're not going to catch the Bachelor or anything on it. But I really like being able to search. I really like being able to check Twitter and search, or like watch Twitter streams while I'm watching a live event. And I just like being able to Google stuff from my on my machine. I think that having a browser on the TV has sort of been an underrated concept. But that said. Wait for the update and then fire it up.
Yeah.
Once it gets to the market, I think that'll be a big deal. We need apps, more apps for sure.
Well, I like the idea of a search box on the TV, which is basically what the point, was the high concept there. And certainly my Comcast remote has more buttons than a keyboard already. And they make less sense than the keyboard.
That's a good point. At least the keyboard is something and understand.
Yeah, the piece that makes sense here is the thing that Apple has done so nicely with the iPads and the iPhone and the Apple TVs of moving stuff seamlessly between them.
Right.
So you can use.
But that's just rebranded DLNA. You could do that. Android supports it.
Yeah, except with, have you tried using DLNA? No. I got 12 steps into the process and gave up. The Apple one actually said, okay, we can integrate this stuff and make it work.
There's an AirPlay menu. You select the device. Click it, and it starts playing.
And you can remote control it, which is great because I've lost 3 Apple remotes somewhere in the living room already because the damn things are too small.
My secret with Apple remotes is the same secret I have for fountain pens. You just keep and nail clippers. You just keep buying them until they're so the space is so saturated with remotes that it'll be somewhere. And they're cheap enough and small enough. It's easy to do. I like those new aluminum ones. All right, say again.
Just one, Kevin. You're right. Having a search engine on the TV is exactly what we want, but that is precisely what disintermediates the cable model of giving you curated channels that you don't want.
So there's a business deal that needs to be done there. The business piece is the hard piece there. The tech's there. I mean, the other thing to think about this is the, you know, moving between screen stuff, which is, you know, this isn't. In some ways, it's obvious. You know, Microsoft's been talking about three screens for a long time. But the other thing is, if you've got one of these here, that's the same number of, you know, pixels per radian as the television is across the room, and as the laptop is at that distance. So as these devices get high density screens, they're effectively the same resolution as the TV. The other
side. So you don't buy the distinction between sit back and lean forward. You think it's all really the same, just depending on how close it is.
It depends on how you use it. I think it's changing. I found that...
That's the problem with Google TV, in a nutshell, is that it is... I have a sit-back experience for a TV. You know, sit back and watch it. And the keyboard and mouse requires is a lean-forward interface.
Right. But if you've got a thing in your hand that you were used to...
Yeah.
You know, instead of the remote control, you've got something like
you
this.
You don't use a tab. Do you use a tab or do you use the phone?
For the...
There's a Galaxy Tab interface, too, I think.
For the Apple TV?
For the Google TV. That's right. You use
Apple
TV.
I don't have a Google TV. I never got into that chain.
Save $300.
I've used the Apple One.
Now it's $99. But Gina and I didn't wait till it was $99.
But I've also used Double Twist on the phone and on the thing to send stuff to Apple TV, because they reverse engineer the protocol.
Right.
So my Android devices can send stuff to that as well. I found useful too. But the real... So what I was getting at with these devices actually becoming, you know, replacing all the other remote controls and devices at first seems ridiculous, because these things are, you know, far more expensive. But that is how you get around that problem of the stuff you get from the cable company has to be cheap and crappy, because they're making low margins on it. If you're already carrying a device that costs 10 times as much, but has downloadable software, then that's what you can do, and that's what Apple has clearly done well with the Apple TV integration with the other devices, and it's there for the taking with Android and these other devices too, if they can get those sort of business deals and the coordination together. And that may be the piece that they can sell to the cable companies, because they're going to be seeing the pressure from Apple in that respect.
But once again, and I'm not saying this is going to happen, and I have some faith in Google because I am the Google fanboy, but if you're going to look at devil's scenarios, the closer Google gets to business with evil cable companies, like evil phone companies and somewhat evil manufacturers, the worse off we are. So at some point, if, you know, Motorola, a major customer of Motorola's is cable companies.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I'm a little nervous.
And you know, you hit the nail on the head when you said that every time they do this, we feel like Google's going to zig in our favor, and they zag in the company's favor.
Right.
Right. And their line is that they're making compromise to make iterative small changes, right? To just get their foot in the door. All right. I won't defend the device. All right.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cough into it. I'm looking at the... Is this the link you sent me? The approach to innovation about Motorola?
Or just has the list. If you go,
leveraging a long history and building for the future. This sounds like a newsreel.
Right there, I think.
As of January 2011, Motorola will own 25,000 patents and patent applications worldwide. That's a lot.
It's a lot.
Mobile devices business segment has 14,600 granted patents, another 6,700 pending, including 2G, 3G, 4G, H.260. Ooh, wait a minute. H.264 and MPEG-4.
Patents in them.
That's intriguing because, of course, remember, it's MPEG LA that's claiming that WebM is encumbered. Google may have gotten more than just telephony patents here. Yep. 802.11, Open Mobile Alliance, and as you mentioned, near field communications patents. Boy, I tell you, I think the tech press really wasn't paying attention. We should have caught this.
Amen.
If it hadn't been August, I think we would have caught this and said, you know, I think Google should buy Motorola. This looks like the right move if what you want to do is build a patent defense.
A better move than Nortel.
Much
they
better.
They got much, much more than they would have gotten with Nortel.
Let's point out, though, price. Three times as expensive.
Yeah,
it's just
$5 million is a chump change compared
to
this.
I guess you're right. It's Larry Page, you find that.
It's about the same per patent. Somebody did the analysis, and if you divide the number of patents by what they paid, it's almost exactly the same as what they paid for auto. In fact, someone said it was exactly the same, which was...
I don't know why. Maybe you would do the math in your head, Kevin, but I thought it was more expensive for Nortel's. What was I don't remember the number, though.
It's not the number. It's really have a business in 3 years or not?
Yes.
Is what it really, really is.
So the truth is, this isn't about making the ultimate Android phone. This is just about keeping Android free, keeping the status
quo. No, Gina,
quo.
You and I are going to believe. We're going to hope. We're going to cross our fingers.
So,
I believe in fairies. It is going to be a better phone.
If you can make Ready. Motorola make better phones, that's good. If it can finally get my Droid past 2.2, that'll be great too.
Yeah, maybe at least we'll get a later version of the operating system. I like the Droid phones a lot. And
they have some room for improvement in the tablet arena. I think they can do better
the
than the Zoom. The Zoom.
I never tried an Atrix, but I mean, at least it seemed like an interesting idea.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of patents, I don't know what's going on here, but apparently Jeff Bezos has filed a patent, the guy at Amazon, has filed a patent for airbags for phones. it's an airbag that inflates around your device if you drop it. I like it.
That's kind of crazy.
Okay. Why not? You've got the accelerometer in there. You really wouldn't want this to inflate while you're holding the phone into your ear. Could be a potential problem, but I think that's a good idea. Upon detecting risk of damage and prior to impact with the surface, the damage avoidance system activates a protection system having one or more protection elements that work in concert to reduce or prevent damage to the portable device upon impact with the surface. Airbags. They also envision a reorientation element that would turn the device so it hits the ground on the side of the device where the airbag has been deployed.
So the cat.
Or they could just use feature. That piece so it doesn't land on the screen.
Yes. Just flip it as it goes down. Wouldn't that be weird if, like a cat, you drop your phone and it goes whoop, on the way down?
It lands on the back.
Like a cat.
And no
always
airbag,
lands on its feet.
Four little legs come out.
I feel like this is an XKCD comic just waiting to happen.
I can't believe this is... It's not April Fool's. I'm just checking, right? This is the strangest... it's actually Jeff Bezos and Vice President of Amazon, Gregory M. Hart, who have filed this. This is a perfect example of a patent. The patenting an idea, not an actual process.
Right. Well, that's the other thing about this software patent stuff.
I mean, oh, it's terrible.
The one that got me this week was Apple was filing a patent on printing without printed drivers. Right? Uh-huh. There was a news story about that halfway through the week.
Right.
That should be a commandment of God, not a patent.
But Google has this thing called Google Cloud Print that they open sourced last year or something that does exactly this. I mean, if you actually read it through, it's pretty much the same thing.
Prior art.
And I was comparing them. And it was like, wait a minute, one of these is designed to be obfuscated and not make sense. And one of these is code that you run that shows you exactly how to do this.
Right.
Why am I allowed to patent the one and not the other? So my take on software patents is, okay, you can have software patents, but I better be able to compile what you're issuing.
Oh, I love that.
You better maintain it for 20 years until it goes free. You know,
it has to compile and run.
The point of the patent system was to get people to document their stuff so that other people could build it.
Right.
Well, we have a better mechanism now. It's called open source.
Right.
But okay, if you don't want to go that way, maintain a source code repository, make sure it compiles, commit to maintaining it for the life of your patent, such that it's usable 20 years afterwards. Sure, if you're going to do that, I'd accept software patents. But what they do now instead is have a vague description that's designed to be as broad and nebulous as possible and not reducible to a mechanism. And there was some case law this week, yesterday or today, I'm not sure. We have to ask Denise about it tomorrow, but saying that. Creating a precedent that just because you've turned something from a description into something that runs on a computer doesn't mean it's not nebulous. That was part
of it.
Does
that protection exist for physical patents? Do you have to make like a wooden working model? No, you just have to.
Historically, you used to, and they
moved
very
away
much
from
the
that.
Original.
Yeah.
The original intent of it, and if you look at the history of patents, that's what it was. And you had to physically bring something to the patent examiner's office. And now they don't do that to the same extent. But that was certainly the intent of patents. You know, there was quite a good article debating the history of patents this week that said the problem with patents is that we're filing too many stupid ones and we should be filing sensible ones. It's your fault, software engineers, which is, you know,
fault of the Patent and Trademark Office for...
Is the fault of the Patent and Trademark Office for accepting this?
And the attorneys and owners of the companies and investors in the companies who push for this.
As long as the PTO will accept it, you should file it. It would be stupid and imprudent not to file it.
Especially now when a patent is worth $400,000 to $500,000
each. Precisely. Wow, that's...
Quite. I mean, that's the other thing is that, you know, if you work for a high-tech company, they'll give you a $1,500 bonus or something for filing a patent. And the engineer's now going, wait, and they're selling for $400,000 now? What happened there?
According to Breaking Bad, the guy who invented the synthetic diamond only got $5. That's enough from General Electric. That's another story. That's what happens when you watch TV. You learn things, I think.
I haven't followed the story. When Obama talks about trying to create jobs through patent reform, is he doing God's work in this?
What is his proposal?
I don't know.
The Protect IP Act is another one of these annoying extend intellectual property because property is a good thing type laws. It doesn't actually help any of this.
It's the one that lets them shut down websites, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not what.
Yeah, so the Obama speech there was sort of classic. This protects the small inventors.
This is good for jobs,
which is the opposite of what we're seeing.
It's actually a crazy bill, and I really.
There is no making jobs out of thin air.
No,
I wrote a post a week ago while we were off. It says we're not waiting for a jobless recovery. We have a jobless future. The discussion was incredible. on it. And by the way, Hacker News, what's his name? The founder of Hacker
Paul
News.
Paul Graham.
Thank you. Paul linked to it on Hacker News. And boy, is that the best thing that happened. I spent 8 hours on my vacation just reading the comments and taking notes on them. They were brilliant.
You're proposing a South by Southwest panel.
Please, folks, go to South by Southwest, look up my name, and say yes to because I changed the last minute to this topic.
I think this is great. And boy, if you're looking for panelists, I'd love to talk. This is fantastic. Yeah, everybody vote for that. You got a link on buzzmachine.com to the...
I didn't mean to... I did mean
no, that, this is... I think okay. This is good. Honey, we shrunk the economy.
That's what depresses me so much, is to think that we could do one simple thing and the government can make up jobs. No, things are changed bigger than that. This is much huger in the change.
Well, that's what Jeremy Rifkin's been saying for three decades.
Yep. Yep.
And I think he's right, and I don't know what you do to solve it. But certainly you don't pass bills like the Protect IP Act.
That makes me so sad now.
The one thing that I feel like people haven't been bringing up in the patent discussion is have you all heard of peer to patent?
No, what's that?
Peer to patent.org. And this is what Expert Labs is actually, what the inspiration of Expert Labs was. It's a system that helps employ kind of expert citizens to help the patent office vet applications.
Good
so
idea.
It's basically like crowdsourcing application review and vetting. And it was really successful, and it's continuing now, and it's something I'd like us to see a lot more. Interested parties get to review patent applications and provide information on them and help the patent office make good decisions.
I think
often the case what
really happens is that we sit here as citizens and go, gosh darn it, the government's doing a crappy job and they ought to do better. And really, the solution is very frequently getting involved.
Yeah,
absolutely.
With this kind of thing, I mean, part of the problem with the USPTO is that patent examiners do not have to be experts in the field they're examining. They don't know prior art. They don't know what's going on, but they could be helped. And I've been told by congressional staffers that Congress could do a much better job in writing laws if people would step forward and volunteer and help.
Well, if someone would actually read them. Beth, I interviewed Beth Novick, who was Obama's head of transparency until she left early this year, wrote the book Wiki Government and wrote about this, and I interviewed her for Public Parts. And what surprised me most about this, Gina, was that I thought the patent examiners, in the classic view of a government bureaucrat, would resent and hate this. And she said, no. They're very lonely. Their job takes a long time. They don't know often what they have to do. They end up meeting with experts that they need to meet with and hear more and do a better job faster. And, what's not to love?
Yep. Yep. Yeah, she did an incredible job of peer to patent. And I'd like to see hear it come up in discussions a little more often as a possible solution, kind
good.
Of using the internet to employ experts to help these review processes.
And Eric Schmidt has said that every government agency should be doing this.
I agree. This is government 2.0.
Yep, yes. It absolutely is.
But it starts with us. Instead of bitching and moaning about the government, step forward and do it.
Yep.
The government is of the people. And so you can't complain about it unless you're participating. Got this great stuff. All right. Let's see. Cyanogen.
Ooh, I want to hear Gina on this one.
His name, his real name is Stephen. Was it Kondik?
Steve Kondik. Kondik. Yeah, I'd love to get him on the show sometime.
Deal.
He's kind of he's a quiet guy. He doesn't talk much. And in fact, the story is that he's joined Samsung Mobile.
But it comes from his Facebook page.
Well, this is the thing, right? He didn't give an interview or a statement. He just changed his employment status on Facebook,
and
I can't find that he's made any kind of comment about this, right? So it's like, is he contracting what? So Steve Kondik, Cyanogen, he created the Cyanogen mod, which is one of the most popular Android ROMs, and now he's employed by Samsung, apparently.
He said, according to this article in Engadget, he said that he told his fans it will be the Cyanogen mod is not affiliated, but he will be working on making Android more awesome. You're right. He doesn't say whether it's a full time. For some reason, I got the sense, maybe I'm wrong, that it was not a full time job.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know because he hasn't really said. But I would love to try to get him on the show sometime.
Use CM7 on my G2X, and I love it. I have I put the nightlies on there now.
Yeah.
Just because I love the idea that I'm getting an update every day. So finally, you know, T-Mobile, you wouldn't update me to Gingerbread. Well, screw you. I'm going to have the latest every night.
Right. And that's Steve. I mean, he's been doing some great work.
It's amazing.
This is a huge catch for Samsung, right? But it's one of those things is Samsung going to influence Steve? Is Steve going to influence Samsung? It's hard to say. I'm a little concerned about the future of Cyanogen Mod. And also, things get a little weird. He was a software engineer anyway, but things get weird when your pet weekend project becomes your day job. Not that they get weird, but sometimes it can get hard. You know, you say, well, I want to work on something a little different on the weekends. I hope that that doesn't happen. He said that Cyanogen Mod is going to, you know, stay a side project. It's not going to be affiliated with Samsung. Let's hope that his influence, you know, helps Samsung make a better Android experience. He's a pretty strong personality and he's a great Android engineer. So I think that it will, but I worry for the.
But Gina, I'm in devil's mode today. You often say you want a pure Android experience, and mm-hmm. we curse the manufacturers that give us non-standard experiences. And so now are we singing the praises of Samsung being able to make more non-standard experiences?
I think I curse non-standard crappy experiences.
Fair.
That's what I curse, right? Because I mean, I think that if a company made a great Android skin or interface that improved things about Android, Google would.
That's open source.
Incorporate them into the Android core. I know that they would. It happened with my Better Gmail extension. A lot of those features wound up in Gmail Labs, and they're available to everyone. So if people are doing great innovation on top of Android, the good stuff is going to find itself back into the core. I want to see that, but we really haven't seen too much of that. I mean, we've seen some pretty skins, but we've also seen some crap. So I think that the stuff that Steve is doing with Cyanogen Mod is good stuff that people want, users want, advanced users, admittedly. But I'm interested to see him use that knowledge and that experience and to help out Samsung. It's a huge catch for them. Good for him. Congratulations to him. And I'm excited to see him sort of in the Android, the legitimate Android sphere. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. But let's try to get him on the show.
I will do that and
drop a couple of emails.
I mean,
we tried at one point when he was having some, and it didn't work
out. Let's tweet him.
Yeah. Well,
sometimes these guys, if you DM them, it's better.
He's wanted to be on the show. It's just there's been some scheduling conflicts. Yeah.
That's Eileen Rivera, our producer. So maybe we're getting there. Okay. Hey, there was good news, or bad news, and there was good news. Google announced that it was going to kill. I was surprised to hear this. App Inventor, which is their easy tool for making Android applications. But then the good news was they've actually seeded. At the Media Lab at MIT, MIT Center for Mobile Learning, dedicated to transforming education and learning through innovation and mobile computing. They gave him the money and they gave him App Inventor.
Kind of perfect, huh?
Yay! And I love it. Hal Abelson is one of the directors of the center. He's the guy who did that great MIT class, which is still a classic, SCIP. You can download it. Teaching first-time computer programmers how to use Lisp. Michael Resnick, a Lego Papert professor of learning research. I'd love to be just a Lego Papert anything. And Eric Klopfer, who's a professor of science education. So they're going to focus, I think this is great, not merely on computer science and electrical engineering, but on education. And I imagine maybe we'll get some great curricula on using App Inventor. which is funny.
And App Inventor, it's open source, but MIT is going to be kind of the folks, one of the partners kind of in charge. Right.
And Hal Abelson actually created App Inventor while he was on leave during a sabbatical at Google. Yes, so
it makes it a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah.
But they already had Scratch, right? I don't know if you've seen Scratch, which was the MIT programming for kids toolkit thing.
Oh, yeah.
Very similar to App Inventor. So if they can actually merge those two, that'll be great. Because App Inventor, when I last tried it, was a bit creaky. It was bouncing back and forth between a jar wrapper and the browser.
Well, and you have the same problem with Scratch, which is its desktop development, and the future really is mobile development.
If they can sort of bring those two together and make it such that these will generate something that's usable as an app on other things. I mean, the ideal for me would be use this as an HTML5 authoring tool.
That
would be
the thing
that would make more sense than, so Scratch was built that makes little Java applets, which is, the old embedding app stuff in the browser model. I'm encouraged that it's gone to that center, because I think that's a good fit for it.
I also thought it was interesting is that Joy Ito has accepted, he's going to be director of Media Lab.
He is already there, yeah.
Which I think is amazing.
Yeah. Well, the other one is Ethan Zuckerman has taken over a center there run by the Knight Foundation. I went to an event there, and I saw the culture change already. God bless the Media Lab, but I worked with them years ago, and everything was kind of pridefully useless.
Right.
Right? And they gave some of the old projects they'd worked on, and they were good-hearted but just ridiculous. And then in came and a lot of religion, anything that's a closed network is automatically bad. Twitter is bad because it's closed. And Ethan comes in and he says, well, people are doing things with Twitter. That's where the people are. And let's understand it and do stuff with it. It was a breath of wonderful, fresh Ethan air.
So the Dusseldorf Regional Court has said that the Galaxy Tab 10.1 can be sold again in Europe.
Aber nicht in Deutschland.
Nicht in Deutschland. What?
That's where Apple brought the original complaint against Samsung. So the EU has said, well, sell it everywhere, but the Germans can't get the Galaxy Tab. Don't know what to say.
I like that it's making a demand for the thing. I mean, I like my Galaxy Tab, but my 7-inch, but it's not that great.
That's true. And a lot of people are saying they hadn't heard of it until they heard about this action.
They're searching for it. People are trying to buy it on eBay.
We want it. We can't have it. We must have it.
Right. It seems almost like a Streisand effect for Apple saying, this thing's a copy of the iPad. And they're going, oh, really?
Oh, that's true. That sounds interesting. And it's, I think I'll take one.
I like the 10.1. I'm a fan of that device.
I do too. Actually, I carried it to court.
Apart from the connector.
For my jury duty. People thought I had an iPad. A lot of people said, ooh, I wish I had an iPad. And, no, it's not
an
iPad.
I live in an iPad tab house, and they're different. They're different sizes. The camera's in a different place.
Yeah, and it's a much better camera.
Versus landscape. There's no hardware button. It's different. I know it's very similar, but it's different.
It's different. Yeah, yeah. And it's nicer in some ways as well. And it doesn't integrate with all the same bits the Apple one does. It has pluses and minuses. I have both, and but I find that if I'm reaching for one, I'll probably reach for the tab first, which is interesting. Steve Gilmore said, "Oh, once you get the iPad, you won't look back." And it's like, "Oh, well, yeah, I've got that too, have I?" Okay.
Well, you're not looking back, are you?
True. But I need the iPad. I'm looking on the floor. Where's it
gone? We're going to do the first twig in weeks without mentioning Google Plus. So I'm just going to skip right over those stories.
We will, however, mention Glee.
Okay.
Have you gone to see the 3D movie?
No, but Kara Swisher said she loved it.
I did.
Opening night. I got my string backpack. Nice. I got my hat. The whole thing.
You guys are such gleeks.
It was so charming, Leo, because it really was a love song to losers.
Aww. It was
everybody on it. You look at them and say, oh, these are people who are being made fun of elsewhere in the world, and they found their place, and they're happy, and they're respected, and it was really kind of wonderful. I hate the 3D part. That was driving me nutty.
I don't go to 3D
movies. It was gratuitous. It was needless.
They're singing. What are they going to do, like this?
My wife had on, a wig, sunglasses, and a mustache. She didn't want to be recognized. I was like,
That's so funny.
So what is it? In your house, then, this is the equivalent of the chick flick.
Yeah, exactly. It's
true. For years, I've been saying that this meant Laportian. So I'm just glad to welcome the Gleeks. into the group.
Well, I just wanted to get that in there. We haven't done Chipotle jokes. We haven't done Google
no,
Plus.
No, no, no.
We you, got Jeff. In Glee.
Thank you, Jeff. Opening night. Yep. It was very exciting. So I'm glad to hear that you saw it. You did your homework for the show.
Well, and they're good news that Google is now offering $20,000 scholarships to aspiring tech journalists. Do you like this idea?
I love this idea, and I want to get that money for my students. Yeah, I think it's a great thing.
Six graduate or undergraduate students will each get $20,000 toward a degree in any field that combines journalism, new media, and computer science. It's about time. We need smarter press, smarter judiciary, smarter Congress. Anything that brings computer science education into those fields is a good thing, I think.
Is this about Google trying to make nice with the news corporations? Or
yeah, somewhat.
I think I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt here. I think they're right. I think informed technology press is good for everybody, and enough ignorance, enough stupidity.
Yeah.
Certainly, it's something I can get behind. Ignorance and stupidity. So let's see. I think we're going to take a break and come back with your tip, Gina. Jeff's number of the week and my tool of the week in just a second. Before we do that, I just want to remind everybody, I don't even have to take any time to do this. Get Netflix. If you don't have Netflix, get Netflix. Go to Netflix.com/twit. If you already have Netflix, tell a friend. Tell a family member. $7.99 a month for unlimited streaming, including Glee, Mad Men, movies. Just as the best. I live on Netflix streaming to the constant despair and dismay of Comcast. Another good reason to do it. Netflix.com/twit. We thank you for your support. And now, whoa!
Nice.
That's the TriCaster. I love the TriCaster. We're having so much fun with the 8500 Extreme. A tip of the hat to New Tech for that. That's
before incredible. We get to that, we have 1 second.
Netflix runs on the Chromebook now this week. That was something that was new this week, right?
They have a kid tab on the Netflix. Is that what you're talking about?
No, it runs on the Chromebook.
Oh, it runs on Chromebook.
Yeah,
I was. Using how does it do that?
Through software, through the power of.
But I thought it was a Silverlight client, so they must be using. What does the netbook support? Does it support Flash or WebM?
I think it's using WebM. You can't pull it to bits as easily, so I don't know. But Netflix isn't exclusively Silverlight. They run on whatever's available.
Right.
And the challenge is getting agreement from the lawyers that the DRM is suitable, so, which is why they only run on some Android tablets. But they've actually
and why they don't run on Chrome and Linux.
Yeah.
By the way.
Well, they do run on Chrome on Linux. This is Chrome on Linux. But,
just kind of generic Chrome on Linux. True. You have to have a netbook.
Oh, Chromium. Chromium. Gotcha. Yeah, so the DRM got worked out.
They figured out there.
Yep.
So Gina, did you guys, I can't get my timing straight here, did the whole discussion of shutting down social networks out of the UK riots and all that happen on last week's show?
We did
discuss that a bit. Yeah.
You did, okay.
I was presuming that it had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, because that's, a great story, fascinating story, but.
Well, the news story since then, I think, is that the pair got 4 years for trying to incite riots, which didn't happen on Facebook, and others got arrested for suggesting water gun fights on Facebook.
Oh, please.
It's gotten to be absurd.
Oh, please. 4 years in jail. Wow. Because they created a Facebook group called saying smash down in Norwich Town. He said, meet up behind the McDonald's for looting. He was the only one who showed up. So it didn't really work that well. 4 years.
They shut his page down. But
4 years. And then this other guy set up a page called the Warrington Riots. He took it down a few hours later. His lawyer said he was drunk when he posted it. And he took it down as soon as he sobered up. Boy, this is the Salem witch trials.
And, the Bart stuff is just...
thing is amazing. Yeah, the good news, we should just mention, we talked about it on a tweet, but this was because Bart was worried about protests about a shooting that had occurred on Bart some years ago. The Bart police unilaterally decided to shut down cell phone access in some Bart. Bart is the... light rail system in the San Francisco Bay Area to unilaterally shut down cell phone access in some of the BART stations. The good news is the FCC is now investigating because it's a violation of the 1934 Communications Act to shut down phone service. You can't do that.
Well, that was one of the around the UK was that they were saying
they were shut down BlackBerry, BlackBerry Messenger, or Twitter, or whatever,
and Facebook during riots, and you know.
The tag
inherent stupidity.
Yeah,
clearly, if you want to prosecute people for conspiracy, this is a good way to get evidence. If you shut it down, you won't get it.
There you go. How are we going to know? Hosni Mubarak learned that lesson.
So thank you for that. I just wanted to get that off my.
The
chest.
Twitter hashtag for the BART shutdown was Mubartek. All right, now Gina's tip of the week.
So Google Labs has been shut down, but that doesn't mean that. I know. But it doesn't mean the individual products lab sections aren't shut down. Like Gmail has labs and Google Calendar has labs. Google Maps for Android also has labs. And in the latest Google Maps application update on Android, there's a new labs feature. So if you're in Google Maps on your Android phone, you go menu, go to more, and there's a labs item. And there's a few different cool little features you can enable. You can pre-cache maps if you know you're going to be not going to have a signal. You can measure. You could increase the size of the text. You can measure units, like distance between units. But there's a new labs feature called bubble buttons, which just makes the buttons that show up when you search for a place on maps like really big. There's a great big navigation button and a great big call button.
It fills the screen.
It fills the screen and it shows whether or not the business is open. So if you're in the car and you go in some place, you can hit a button real quick. It's just a minor little tweak, but it's useful if you. I use maps a lot. I basically use my Android phone for email and maps. So if you haven't checked out Labs and Google Maps on Android, check it out. It's in the menu, but make sure you get your update first because this bubble buttons feature just came down the latest update.
I like big bubble buttons.
I love big buttons, and I cannot lie.
I cannot lie. Those other brothers can't deny. When a map comes up with a great big, never mind.
Button. You just gotta.
I get sprung. Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Sir Maps-a-Lot.
Sir Maps-a-Lot. I think we got a we got a parody video here.
Ooh, it looks good. You should be doing the Google videos.
Jeff Jarvis, your numero of the week.
My number is 6. As in degrees of separation, Cam Marlowe, who is now data chief at Facebook, formerly Yahoo, has put the two worlds together to create smallworld.sandbox.yahoo.com to actually bring data, research data, that will end up in a peer-reviewed journal kind of article about trying to test 6 degrees of separation.
Oh, really?
You go on.
I thought that was just accepted.
Well, now it might be shorter, maybe less. So you go on to that site, again, smallworld.sandbox.yahoo.com, and you put in the name of someone else and see what the system can do to route you.
Oh, so I'm going to play. This sounds like fun. Wait a minute. I'm going to agree to Yahoo. Yeah, this sounds like fun. And then I have to say Facebook. I guess that's how they're doing it, huh? Using Facebook. Okay, so I'm allow the Yahoo Small World experiment. My objective, get a message to this person in as few steps as possible. Does it count if I use Twit? Elon lives in Jerusalem. So you can select
Jeff Pulver.
Yeah, Pulver is probably a good choice. All right, I think Pulver's on my Facebook friends. Let's continue the chain. Select who's the closest. Let's see if I have Jeff.
Or Yossi Vardy, either one.
Yossi Vardy, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's. I don't know if I have Yossi in my Facebook, but I bet you I have Jeff. Let's see. You'd think. So this is cool. So you get to pick one and only one person from your Facebook friends. There's Jeff Jarvis, Jeff McPherson.
Well, that's how the experiment works. I mean, the original Small World experiment was you're supposed to pick the person to send it to that should get it closer.
Right.
And you'll see how far it gets.
Unfortunately, Jeff Pulver is not.
Duncan Watts, who's a Yahoo researcher, re-redid the experiment through email a few years back. And so the original experiment was they had a small group of people, some were in Omaha and some were in Boston. They were trying to get hold of a lawyer in Boston. And they were told, mail this to the person who you think can get it closest and get them to pass it on. And most of them didn't get through, but the ones that did get through, the median number of links was 6.
So that's where that number comes from.
That was the original Milgram experiment way back in the 50s or 60s.
So the question would be, could you social media shorten that chain then?
Right. Are we in a more connected world now, which would one would hope and assume, where you can make this with fewer hops, as we would say today?
All right, so I am going to now. I have to choose what is all of this stuff? I guess this is just additional material to help them with their research, right? They want to know my occupation. They never have pundit in here, so I guess I'll just choose media. I'm a media thing. Writer, editor, probably. All right. So let's see. So I
picked Renee Blodgett. That's a good choice.
Yeah, Renee has led tours of Israel.
Very good choice.
Yeah, I mean that's the closest I could come. And then I say, how do I know her work? She's a publicist. I've known her for I think 10 years.
She does the geek tours.
Yeah, and she did a geek tour to Israel. A couple of geek tours to Israel. So I suspect. In fact, invited me on one. I turned it down because I consider it not editorially. I regard her as a business or professional acquaintance. Relationship 3. I don't know. Okay, so there's a lot of stuff. Okay. Boy, invite the friend to join the chain. Yeah, that's good. Renee's probably already. Oh, boy. Jeez, Louise. Join. let's see. Cool.
That was going to look like some game. We have to. I think this is more than a game.
Yeah. No, it's research. It's science. Okay, good. Now we'll see. Now, will I get information back?
I don't know.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm going to become a target. You can become a target.
Oh, that's cheating. That's wonderful. You'll single-handedly bring down the 6 to 5.
Yeah. I am separated by a 0 degrees of separation from everybody. I'm just going to leave what's in there from Facebook, not add any additional features, and we'll see.
I get recognized all around thanks to the power of Leo.
Let's see what happens. I'm going to show you my pick of the week, which it kind of I just was inspired to talk about it because of the Cyanogen story. And I mentioned that I do. let's open the curtain on my pick of the week.
we all want our own transition.
Starting to feel like
I
want mine now.
Starting to feel like Home Improvement or something. This is the easiest way to modify your phone. It's on the Android market. It's completely legal. You do have to root your phone first, and for that, you merely Google root and the brand of Android phone that you have. You should easily find a one-click rooting solution. But once you've rooted it, this is the way to make it possible to save your current state, to restore it, to add other ROMs. It's free. It's called ROM Manager from Clockwork Mod. And I'm sure you must use Clockwork Mod, Gina, when you do your modification of your phone. It's really it's a great recovery tool. And they also have a premium version for $6. Which I recommend buying because that gives you access to the Cyanogen nightlies. And what's great is because I've got ROM Manager running on my G2X, it notifies me when there's a new ROM automatically. So almost every morning I wake up and I say, ooh, I can screw up my phone this morning. So
Andy,
far, you know, those nightlies are quite good and haven't had a problem with them at all. Wow!
Wow.
So that's pointing
that's
up.
That's just the tool as well.
That's pointing up the screen. Would you like Kevin Marks to make a tip, a suggestion, add something to this?
That's just a tool. So there's a Android app called NanoTweeter, which I've always been a fan of. Basically, what it does is it takes Twitter messages and turns them straight into Android notifications. And you can put through at replies, direct messages, and you can put a list of names in it'll check your feed for those and pass them through. And I've always liked this thing, but it broke when Twitter updated their stuff. And I was annoyed by this, but then I realized last week this thing's open source, so I went and downloaded the source and patched it and sent the patch to the original guy.
Nice.
And so now it works again.
I love open source.
I love Kevin Marks.
Hey, Kevin, you want to work on my app?
That's awesome.
I got a couple of bugs for you to work on.
That's awesome. I thought I'd fix it, actually.
I'll play with your app, too. But then that was the... You know,
Nice.
I bought a Toyota, and it crashed, but I fixed it for them.
What does this do that's different? Because like the standard Twitter client, you can say in notifications, hey, notify me when there's a DM, and it'll show up in notifications. This is different.
It gives you annoying notifications. It gives you like, you know, it's like those Google Plus ones that are like, somebody commented on something that you don't know about. Whereas this one, it just translates the tweet directly into a notification so you can see who it's from or on what the whole tweet is.
Ah.
And obviously, you wouldn't want every tweet you can read coming through that way unless you only spread five
people. Do it with DMs, probably.
But it works for DMs, it works for ats, and you can say, oh, I want to hear everything Leo says, and put Leo Laporte in, and it'll show you all the Leo ones. And it's very simple. It doesn't draw much battery if you don't set it to poll too often. I just find it a really useful way to work with Android. And the other thing is, when you select them, because of Android has intents, you can choose which Twitter client to view them in and remember the preference, and it'll go
love
there.
That.
So by default, it routes you back to the Twitter web, but you can route it to the Twitter client or Seismic or whatever Android Twitter reader you like.
Love that. And this is the other part I love about Android. Market.android.com, you press the install button, you tell it which phone you wanted to install it on. I have to sign in my Google account. For some reason, does this do this to you? It always makes me sign into my Google account each time.
Yes. It's a security thing.
That's a little annoying.
You don't want to leave yourself logged in and have people randomly install things to your phone.
I guess that makes sense.
It's bad enough leaving yourself logged into Facebook.
So there, and now I'm going to send this to my phone, and when I go get my phone, it will have installed NanoTweeter. And that's nice. That's why we like Android best. Hey, thank you so much for being here. Kevin Marks is at Salesforce.com, but is a great astute commentator on all things internet. And we will get you on Triangulation soon, because I'd love to hear the Kevin Marks story.
Oh, can I do one more little plug?
Yeah.
On TunnelVision tomorrow night, TunnelVision.tv, we've got Paul Adams, who's the originator of the Google Circles idea, who's now working at Facebook, coming on to talk to us about social experience design and things. So
that would be great.
If you're missing the lack of Google Plus in this show, come and listen to us tomorrow night.
We left it out so you could have it, Kevin Marks.
TunnelVision.tv tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern.
With Deb, of course, and Heather and Kevin. And a great show, which you must listen to. Mr. Jeff Jarvis is at the City University of New York. He's also online at buzzmachine.com and is a great guy, at Jeff Jarvis on the Twitter, plus Jeff Jarvis on the Google. And, which, by the way, at works on the Google Plus, which is kind of cool.
Yes, which I like too.
So you just say at, and that could be either one.
Yeah.
And it's great to see you again, Jeff. I'm glad to have you back, and I'm glad to be back.
We are so happy to have you back.
Yay! I love the show. And, of course, Gina Trapani, who is at smarterware.org and a contributor to many great sites and always fun, plus Gina Trapani, or at
yes.
Gina Trapani.
Plus or at. Great to be here. And I hope that I'm going to plug it. Oh, thank you. And I'm going to plug Jeff's public parts video, which is super cool. Everyone
Wait a minute.
Check
I didn't
out.
Hear about that. What's that?
There's a trailer for the book, right? Right, Jeff?
He's gone.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
he's gone shy all of a sudden.
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we end the show with Jeff Jarvis explaining public parts? And we'll see you all next time on This Week in Google.
This is embarrassing.
Nah.
We're entering a magnificent age of sharing and publicness. 600 million of us have joined Facebook. We share stuff a billion times a day. Each of us now has our own Gutenberg press. It enables us to speak to anyone in the world. So this is a time of great opportunity for transparency. But at the same time, there are many fears about privacy. Now, mind you, privacy is important. It needs to be protected. I've found in my research for Public Parts that fears about privacy often come with new technologies. When Gutenberg invented the press, authors were scared of putting their thoughts down on paper permanently spread widely under their name. And now the internet, perhaps the greatest technology we've ever had, is causing lots of fears about privacy. We have these magnificent new tools that enable us to do so much. If all we do is pay attention to privacy, we may lose the opportunities and the benefits of publicness. Now this works on a
you
big
can end it anytime.
Scale of society, but it also works on a very
It's only 2 minutes. Come on.
I've been very public about
so
my prostate
impatient.
Cancer. You can't get much more public than that. You'd wonder, why the hell would I do that? Because I got great benefit back. I've had friends who've had this operation, and I didn't have any way to know that except that I told the world about it.
That's true.
Friends of mine have gone and gotten their prostates checked because of what I went through.
And it's fun.
Well, that means that there's a benefit to sharing. You have to keep in mind that sometimes when you hold something back, you have to ask yourself, would that be selfish? Being public enables you to build relationships. You can stay in your home all day long, but then you don't know what relationships you didn't build. If you're a company, you can operate with your customers and your suppliers in all kinds of new ways. If you're government, you bloody well should be out having new kinds of relationships with the public. Publicness is also about organizing. We can organize movements. We can organize clubs. We can organize all kinds of things. All these things become possible because we open up to the world and have the faith to do so. So I think this is the beginning of an age of sharing and publicness.
Love it.
Great job, Jeff.
Wow. Simon Schuster went all out on that one. Jeff, Gina,
thank you.
Kevin, thank you. Kevin, we're talking right now with Salesforce about being part of the Dreamforce conference. They want me to do a social media panel.
Oh, perfect. Lovely.
So I hope maybe I can get all three of you to be on that. That'd be kind of fun.
That'd be great. I've gone to Salesforce events, and they, you know, they bring in smart people, and they're good events.
Yeah, it'd be a lot of fun.
Dreamforce is August 31st in San Francisco, and I think you can still get tickets.
Is it that soon? Wow. Have we made the arrangements yet? I thought it was September that we were talking about.
It's the end of August, beginning of September.
Okay.
It's the last day of August.
Oh, yeah. It would be September 1st would be the day of the panel, actually. Yeah, that makes sense. Great. Thank you all.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.